Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning, a chilly Sunday morning in the Capital District. As I drove in today, my dashboard thermometer was reading 9 degrees, but I went out a little early, started the car, so it was a comfortable drive, but keep that in mind if you're headed out, bundle up because it is chilly up here. But I think we lucked out as far as the snow. New York is canceled again today because they did get dumped on down in that region yesterday. So as I say, up here I think we lucked out a little bit being on the far west side of that storm. Today's show, a little bit later on, we'll be joined by Mike Welch from the Daily Racing Forum, kind of take a look at some of those nice stakes from yesterday at Gulfstream. The wind went out of the balloon a little bit, about an eighth of a mile into the Pegasus when Life Is Good just said, yeah, life is good. I'm out here on the lead, floating along, and he took them all the way around. Nixco got up for second, but it was a non-threatening second there. But we'll talk about that and more with Mike a little bit later on. I wanted to start the show. There was also a nice stakes day. I always say it, Laurel, Maryland Racing in the wintertime. You get these nice stakes Saturdays, and yesterday was one of them. And so whenever there is a big day down at Maryland, we like to reach out to our friend Frank Vespi from the Racing Biz. The RacingBiz.com does great coverage of racing in the Mid-Atlantic region. Frank, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Good to be with you.
Yeah, good to have you on board. And before we get to Maryland and discussion of that, I'm curious of what your takeaway was yesterday from the Pegasus. And were you still at Laurel at that time? Were people crowded around the TV screens?
Yeah, I was at Laurel at that time. I had talked with Sabrina Moore, who with her mother Angie bred Nixco.
Oh.
I talked with her on Thursday, and they were nervous about it, and I guess the thing that surprised me, it was not a surprise that Life Is Good was able to clear early. I was surprised that Stiletto Boy got to the turn first too. I thought once he got there, Nixco was really up against it, and that's kind of how it played out. So, you know, not the way they hoped he would go out, but just such a great career and such a cool thing for Sabrina and Angie. You know, this was a Maryland bred mare that they claimed for $40,000. They bred to Painter, and you get a horse like that, and you know, it's one that they claimed this horse when they were just starting to say, you know what, we're not going to breed to race, we're going to breed to sell. And you get a horse like that, you know, good horses do come from anywhere. And so it was a pretty fun ride for people in Maryland, for sure.
Yeah, for a breeder on her level, that was just a great story. And that was one of the sub-stories of that career last year. I was reading various articles that included mention of the breeders. And so it was kind of special. The Racing Biz, we talked about that as you are the man behind the Racing Biz. Great way to keep up with news in the Mid-Atlantic. And we were talking before we went on the air, you're going to have an article up. Folks are watching racing today. A jockey who had gotten injured and has been on the sidelines for a while will make a comeback today down in Maryland.
Yeah, Rosario Montanez got hurt in July of 2020. It was a pretty serious injury. And the funny thing that happened is I had assigned the story to somebody. He said, yeah, let's talk to Rosario Montanez, see where he is and if he's coming back and what's going on. And literally like a day later, he showed up in the entries. And so he's got one mount today. I think he's got a couple on Thursday. So he's trying to work his way back. And, you always admire these jockeys and the things they go through and the injuries they suffer. And then they come back. And they're pretty remarkable athletes. You know, we don't always give them all the credit they deserve for that. But so I always root for these guys when they try to come back from injury.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it's a tough profession, a dangerous profession. And when they get injured and go to the sidelines to see them come back, you root that they get to the winner's circle sooner rather than later and get going again. I just wanted to touch on one more thing from the Racing Biz because I was looking at it this morning and you had an article titled Derby Points Update, What's Missing Here? And you talk about kind of a crazy Derby Points season. And it's funny that I pulled it up this morning when I came in, and I was thinking about this actually on the drive in this morning because of the results in Arkansas with the Southwest, that got me thinking about it. The Bob Baffert horse has no points this year in points races, and it's just that Baffert situation coming into the Derby is just going to throw a real monkey wrench into news of the Derby and the Derby trail. And you're right, on the point side, that has already thrown a monkey wrench into that.
Yeah, I just this whole situation makes me kind of crazy. As you said, the Bob Baffert horses can't get Derby points. Also, a couple other horses that would have earned points don't get them because they used Lasix in the Springboard Mile. And it's so horse racing. Like, yeah. Nobody can look at this situation and say this makes even the remotest bit of sense to anyone, and yet that's what we're doing. So, you know, so Baffert's horses now are, I don't know, I think over 40-odd points of Derby points that they don't have because he's Bob Baffert. And it's just, you know, I'm not at all a defender of Bob Baffert. I think this whole situation with all these positives he's gotten in Grade 1 races is a serious matter, but the whole, like, this racetrack and that racetrack, taking it into their own hands, it's just completely cockamamie, and it's bad for the sport. And, you know, there needs to be, as everybody has said, there needs to be some kind of coordination here so that we don't end up with, look, this horse is great, but he can't run in the Kentucky Derby because we don't currently like the trainer. And it's nuts.
Yeah, as I say, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out over the next few months and plays out in New York with the hearing they had this week, and more importantly, plays out with last year's Kentucky Derby, which still hasn't been adjudicated, and that is a big problem as well. But we'll see how it goes. And again, yeah. Folks can check out more of your thoughts there at the Racing Biz with the Derby Points Update article. All right, let's jump in. As I say, the winter at Laurel is a lot of fun because there are these stakes Saturdays. Yesterday was one of them. They had a couple of three-year-old races, and I thought both of the winners are worth paying attention to coming out of the action yesterday. We'll look at the boys' side of things in the Spectacular Bid to start things off. The Spectacular Bid, three-year-olds going 7 furlongs for $100,000. The favorite in here was HP Moon off a big debut victory for Lacey Gaudette. That one winds up a disappointing 6th of 8. HP Moon will be the number 3 horse when we look at the replay. The winner, 6-1, Witty, owned and bred by Elizabeth Merriman. A couple of wins and a second in 3 career starts, but as a Pennsylvania bred, had spent the last 2 starts down at Parks facing state breds, but moved back into open company and looked pretty good yesterday. Chart margin I'm looking at just under 8 lengths. Witty's going to be under Carol Cedeno. Give us your thoughts on the Spectacular Bid.
Yeah, this is a very cool story, and this was a super impressive effort. This was a big step up for Witty. You know, you're facing horses like Locomotive, who's a multiple stakes winner, HP Moon, who's super impressive on debut, Shake 'Em Loose, who's a stakes winner, and Witty just absolutely dominated this field, you know, just as easy as could be there. And the kind of neat thing here is you mentioned Lizzie Merriman is the breeder and owner. She trained the horse for the first couple races. Now it's being trained by McLean Hendricks. McLean Hendricks is Lizzie's son. And afterwards she said, well, I bred the horse and the trainer, and which I thought was funny. And then the other cool thing about the horse is this horse is a half to Caravelle. And Caravelle, you might remember, right, for a minute last year, was probably the best turf sprinter in the East. So it's kind of an equine family that's been really good to this human family, and it's a human family that's been around racing forever and ever. And so just a kind of a really neat story, talking to McLean Hendricks afterwards, and he said, you know, I'm really lucky to have this horse. You know, people wait their whole career to get a horse like this, and he's had 8 starters and has this horse. So just a really neat thing. This horse looks like he looks like a horse that'll go farther, and he looks like a horse that can make some noise.
Yeah, as I say, I thought the winners of both the three-year-old races were worth paying attention to, and Witty, obviously one of those. 3 victories now and 4 career starts. 2 of the wins, as I said, have been over Parks and state breds. But again, as you mentioned, it was a salty field of open company yesterday and got it done, and got it done, again, pretty convincingly. All of the wins so far have been by open length, so Witty may be worth paying attention to as the three-year-old year progresses. Let's turn the page now and go to the three-year-old girls in the extra heat. Again, I thought this was a winner worth paying attention to. This one, as opposed to the winner of the spectacular bid. Luna Bell went off as the favorite. Even money on the morning line went down a little bit from there, 3-5 as the favorite yesterday. Luna Bell, the number three horse, getting it done, coming out of a stakes victory in the prior start. Seven starts coming into it, a couple of wins, a second, and a couple thirds, so it's shown some talent, obviously, for Ham Smith in the first seven starts of the career, and then gets it done again yesterday in the extra heat to, as I say, stamp herself as probably a three-year-old filly to watch as we're early in the season down in Maryland.
Yeah, for sure. One cool side note, it was good to see Kenny Taylor there. Kenny was there to present the trophy. Kenny owned Extra Heat. So
nice.
Kind of neat to see him out at the track and having a good time. But this horse, this is a nice horse, this Luna Bell. She's won her last two starts really impressively. I was talking to Hammy Smith, the trainer, afterwards, and he thinks he's got a horse on his hands. You know, he kind of said, well, you know, I mean, he's an older guy, South Carolina. He's kind of quiet, and he doesn't get too far ahead of himself. But he's kind of said, well, you know, if we want to go to New York, we might do that. If we want to go someplace else, we might do that. You know, we'll just have to see. But he definitely thinks this is a horse that will go farther. Interesting thing watching this race, I think, you know, this horse was put in a drive a long time. You know, this was a long sustained run. She didn't just pop up at the quarter pole, and had a little bit of a tough time getting away from Sparkle Sprinkle around the turn. But once she did, she really surged clear. And this, as you said, this is another one to keep an eye on, particularly if she'll go farther.
Yeah, and I'm just pulling up now as we're talking the buyers, Witty with a nice 81 and Luna Bell with a 79, which for her, yes, is a lifetime best buyer number. And it seemed like over the past couple of starts, 7 furlongs, 2 back, 6 furlongs yesterday, she ran very well and improved numbers a little bit. So, yeah, she might be on her way as a three-year-old. As I say, to me, both of those three-year-old performances were worth watching going forward. Witty and Luna Bell. All right, let's move on now. Yesterday, again, there was a number of stakes races down at Laurel, and that included the What a Summer. This one for fillies and mares going 6 furlongs. The favorite in there, Princess Kokochin, had a lot of early speed, flashed it yesterday. The number one horse is Princess Kokochin. That's kind of a lukewarm 3-1 favorite, but boy, it was a big 12-horse field. The winner winds up to be number 5, Time Limit. You got 7-1, and as I, you know, peruse the PPs, what jumped out at me is 7-1 on a Mike Maker trainee who had been training over at Turfway. The last couple of starts at Fairgrounds in Oaklawn, 3 starts back was out at Del Mar, and they look in the condition books around the country and elect to go to Laurel for a $100,000 purse. Just on that factor, the 7-1 looked attractive. But Time Limit gets it done, a chart margin, a length and a quarter. Your thoughts from the What a Summer?
I found Princess Kokochin, that she went off the favorite, I thought was completely mystifying. I mean, she's very fast, but she's distance limited. And she had run the same race last time out, basically, going to the lead and then getting run down by Kayla Soares. Kayla Soares is back here, finishes second in this spot, and is 9-1. So I was mystified by the betting there. But Time Limit, a pretty nice effort. Victor Carrasco was on her. I don't think there's a hotter jockey on the planet than Victor right now. He won 3 stakes yesterday. He's leading the Laurel Colony in wins, earnings. He's winning at a 40% clip. And he's won, since the beginning of the year, he's won 9 stakes allowances or maiden special weights. No other rider in Maryland has won more than 3. So he's just absolutely torrid right now. And, you know, in this race, he basically said, I wanted to keep her close. He had her in second. And then when Princess Kokochin started to tire, he was able to get the jump and go on to win by a length and a quarter. Kayla Soares along late for second. Curious to see if they're going to use this as a prep for the Fritchie, which comes up in 3 weeks.
That would be interesting because, I wonder, you know, does Mike Maker go back to Turf? You have any idea what the travel time is between Laurel and Turfway?
I don't.
I mean, it's a van ride, clearly, so it's clearly doable, but you would have to think that would be the game plan. And so do they come back in 3 weeks? It'll be interesting to see, but off of that performance. And I'm looking the buyer, solid 88 buyer for time limit in the What a Summer. And wound up the stakes action in the ninth race yesterday, the Fire Plug, four-year-olds and up going six furlongs. And in here, Wonder Where Craig Is goes off as the 3-5 favorite. No surprise, the Brittany Russell trainee had come into the race, six wins in 10 career starts, had won the Bold Ruler up at Belmont in the last start. Now, that was the end of October, so there was a little bit of a layoff. Three starts prior, had been up at Saratoga and won the Tail of the Cat. So this was a horse that not only shipped out of town, but shipped to New York and faced some nice runners in those stakes races at Saratoga and Belmont. So deservedly the 3-5 favorite yesterday, and Wonder Where Craig Is, the number two horse in the replay, does get it done here. And I'm looking a solid 98 buyer for Wonder Where Craig Is. Your thoughts on the Fire Plug?
Yeah, Wonder Where Craig Is a real horse, for sure. As you said, he won the Bold Ruler. He'd also been first past the post in the DeFrancis, the race before that, but got disqualified. So he's a real horse. And in this race, it's kind of interesting. Brittany Russell is saying afterwards that she was concerned because no horses had won on the lead. And her husband, Sheldon, who's a jockey who's injured, said, you know, that's true, but there haven't been any horses like Wonder Where Craig Is that have run yet. And that was exactly right. And you know, he went to the lead and he was just too good for these. And she was not committing to the General George, but the General George would make all the sense in the world for this horse. It's at 7/8, which the Bold Ruler also is. He could walk out of his stall. It's 200 or 250,000. It's grade three. It's a super logical spot for this horse if he's ready to go and feeling good.
Yeah, and if folks are watching the replay there and looked at the colors and wondered, yes, that is a Michael Dubb and Company runner in the barn of Brittany Russell. So Michael Dubb knows where to spot his horses, not only on the track, but as far as trainers as well. A little earlier on the card, I didn't pull up the replays from the two $75,000 races, but probably worth mentioning because a couple of nice horses in the Jennings. It was Cordmaker getting it done. And boy, you talk about a nice Maryland bred base down there in the Mid-Atlantic. Cordmaker, 13 wins and 35 career starts now, well over $800,000 in the bank. And Cordmaker got it done yesterday in the Jennings. And then the Geisha, it was Kiss the Girl getting it done as the even money favorite. Kiss the Girl, again, another nice runner down there in the Mid-Atlantic region. Last time out prior, Mike Trombetta had brought her up to New York, ran third in a stake at Aqueduct, but back at Laurel yesterday, wins the Geisha. Your thoughts on Kiss the Girl and Cordmaker?
Well, one thought is both of them were ridden by Victor Carrasco, as we were talking about before. Guy's just on fire. And Cordmaker's really cool. He's 7 years old now, and he's as good as he's ever been. He's won three stakes in a row, four out of his last five. He got a 102 buyer, two back, which is the fastest of his career. I suspect he was down off that yesterday. But it's just a cool old horse there for Rodney Jenkins and Hillwood Stable, and just fun to see a horse continuing to run as well as this one is. I thought it was a really big effort from Kiss the Girl. She had finished behind Artful Splatter a couple races ago and then run pretty well on the ladies after that. But this was a big effort. She really pretty much laid waste to Artful Splatter and everybody else there. So really good form for her. And I'll be curious to see what happens next. I mean, I think with Cordmaker, he's been winning an open company. This was a Maryland bred race. He can obviously move back to open bred company. Kiss the Girl is looking like that too.
Yeah, and Cordmaker yesterday, a very solid 96 buyer coming out of a 102 buyer win in the prior race. As you say, this is a solid 7-year-old. Kiss the Girl winds up with an 88 buyer yesterday, and they handed me from the control room, they looked it up. Laurel to Turfway, about 8 or 9 hours. So nice little van ride. That's very doable for a Mike Maker trainee from Turfway if they elect to return. Frank, as always, appreciate the thoughts. And I didn't ask you just an overview because, again, we had the storm coming up the East Coast, and I talked to you before we went on the air, but just for folks who were wondering, it did seem like, and I think they had announced before the day, they kind of sped things up down at Laurel a little bit, but as you and I were talking, you may have been in the same situation we were. We were kind of on the cusp of the storm here in upstate New York and just got a little bit of snow. It was kind of cold. There was a little bit of wind, but it sounds like down at Laurel yesterday, kind of the same situation weather-wise.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. We had been concerned we might get a lot of snow, which we did not, and then really concerned because all week they were saying it's going to be frigid, it's going to be, you know, really high winds, there were gale warnings, I mean, the whole thing. And it was windy at times, but nothing really like they had us worried about. So it really ended up, I mean, it was cold, no question, but it was not a bad day at the track. Let's say, if you've been in the East, you've been in worse days at the racetrack than yesterday was, for sure. So we really lucked out. We were very fortunate that able to get that card in, particularly because if they had already delayed it a week, if they'd had to delay it again, I mean, these days, a couple of these races are targeted as prep races for the races February 19th, and you're right at the edge of how far away or how close you can be and still be a prep race. So they really needed to get them in, and fortunately we were able to do it.
Excellent, and it was a fun day of racing. And just before I let you go, it dawned on me, down in Maryland, obviously there have been some surface issues this winter. I'm wondering if you've talked to any of the participants, jockeys or trainers, and they've had a couple of redos now, and it seems to be going well. Have you heard any reaction?
It does seem to be going well. You know, it was interesting in the last race on Thursday, there were a couple horses go down. One went down, one fell over them. But all the horses and all the jockeys were okay. And one of the jockeys who was involved said, "Oh, the track is great. You know, sometimes horses stumble. You know, yeah. They're like people. Sometimes they lose their footing." But he said, "No, the track is great." So far, so good. You know, knock on wood. I mean, the track is pretty deep and slow, and that's that can be a concern. I mean, you saw yesterday, like Cordmaker, you said got a 96 or whatever buyer. The time of that race was 139.70 for a flat mile, which is really, really slow for a one turn mile for stakes quality animal. And look, nobody cares if it's slow as long as it's safe and horses can get over it okay. They seem to be doing that so far. So we'll knock on wood. We've been a lot of trouble with this racetrack, but hopefully they got it figured out now.
Yeah, we're definitely keeping our fingers crossed in that area. Frank, as always, appreciate the visit. Again, I'll tell people to go to theracingbiz.com to keep up with all the action in the Mid-Atlantic region. But we appreciate your conversation looking back at the nice stakes yesterday at Laurel, and we will talk again in the future.
My pleasure, Seth. Always a pleasure to be on with you, and thanks for having me, and look forward to talking with you soon.
Appreciate it. Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. We'll take a break. I'll come back. I'll take a quick look at the Oaklawn Stakes, and then coming up at about 10:40, we will talk to Mike Welch from the Daily Racing Forum, the Florida correspondent from the Daily Racing Forum. We'll get some thoughts on the action yesterday at Gulfstream Park. All of that after this. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku.
The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now. Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. Seth Merrow in the studio. Thanks for joining us. Thanks also to our friends at Gulfstream Park for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming events here at Capital OTB. Appreciate the support during their championship meet. And again, no day sums up that title championship meet like a day like yesterday. And we'll review some of that action a little bit later on with Mike Welch from the Daily Racing Forum. But right now, there was a nice stakes day down at Oaklawn as well, and we'll kind of work our way back the stakes. The King Cotton was yesterday. King Cotton, $150,000 up for grabs for sprinters. And it on paper, it looked like it was going to be another showdown between Nashville and Hollis, who had squared off earlier in December in an optional claimer. Nashville's Steve Asmussen runner, who started the career with just so much talent and just so flashy, won the first three starts, including the Perryville down at Keeneland, the career debut up at Saratoga back in 2020, but then went into the Malibu and ran fourth. That was in 2020, came back in the December race and ran second as the 1-5 favorite behind Hollis. But now Nashville has run three races that have not lived up to what we saw earlier in the career. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, what the game plan will be going forward for Nashville. That said, yesterday, Nashville did get off to a bad start. I'm just looking at the chart here. Nashville squeezed at the start to be last away. So that didn't help for a speedball type of horse, and maybe that'll be an excuse. And we'll see what happens next out for Nashville. Hollis, on the other hand, who had beaten Nashville last time with a 109 buyer. Nashville wound up seventh in the field of eight. Hollis wound up fifth in the field of eight. In the meantime, as you can see, getting it done here on the front end, number seven, Bob's Edge at 7-1. 27-1, Home Base second. Seven Nation Army at 14-1 runs third. But late in the race, no challenge for number seven, Bob's Edge. Bob's Edge coming in off a third-place finish in an allowance at Churchill in the prior race. Two starts back, won a turf sprint at Keeneland. Larry Jones was interviewed after the race, and he said, boy, you know, things kind of played out just the way we wanted them to, and it was helped by the tough break for Nashville. But Bob's Edge, again, getting it done, $16. And 60 cents there for the Larry Jones trainee. So, again, this race fell apart a little bit with the poor break from Nashville and Hollis really not showing up the way he had in the prior start either. So the two likely, Nashville went off at even money. Hollis went off at 2-1, the two horses that were taking the action and looked like they should take the action on the page, both disappointing yesterday, but for Larry Jones, Bob's Edge looking pretty good. A little earlier on the card yesterday, it's that time of year, the three-year-olds squaring off, and that Derby Trail, Arkansas Derby Trail leading to the Kentucky Derby, but that Arkansas Trail is always very productive, or always over the past, you know, what, decade or so, certainly, and part of that has been when Bob Baffert has shipped to Arkansas. This year, as far as the Kentucky Derby, that's going to be a little bit of a different story. As we were saying with Frank Vespi, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out with, Baffert has some talented three-year-olds, and Newgrange is one of them. I like Dash Attack. I thought Dash Attack had won the Smarty Jones on New Year's Day for Ken McPeak, and I just thought off of that, I thought that of the three-year-old races that day, he was the one that kind of impressed me most. But Dash Attack yesterday, boy, he was a little bit disappointing. Dash Attack went off as the 3-1 second choice and wound up fifth in the field of 12. He'll be the number two horse. But Newgrange, the betting public had it right. Newgrange was 3-2, the 10 horse, and you can see John Velasquez said he had to work on him. He said in post-race comments, wasn't really handling the track necessarily, but gets him going finally and gets the momentum, gets up the chart margin 1.5 lengths. Nice late run for Barber Road. That horse was very playable. The one horse, Ben Diesel, gets up for a third. Barber Road at 11-1. As I say, I thought that one was a playable runner coming out of a second place finish in the Smarty Jones. That said, he's second behind Dash Attack. Dash Attack disappoints in there. But the winner, now 3-for-3, and a couple of grade 3 stakes wins under the belt for Newgrange. But again, no Derby points for the Baffert horses, and we'll see how this all plays out. But goes out for Starlight Racing, Matticat and Company, Bob Baffert trains, John Velasquez in for the ride. And again, he went out to Southern California this year because of his partnership over the past, you know, year and a half or so with Bob Baffert, and it has paid off in Southern California. He's having a great winter season out there. He comes to Oaklawn to take a shot at the better part of a $750,000 purse yesterday in the Southwest, and gets it done pretty nicely to run the record now 3-for-3. Won the maiden breaker at Del Mar in November. That Breeders' Cup meet, came back on New Year's Day and won the Sham, and then follows it up yesterday and wins the Southwest with a nice performance. So Newgrange getting it done and looking pretty good doing it. And a little earlier on the card, the coach, Dwayne Lucas, with a three-year-old filly that will be worth watching going forward in the Martha Washington earlier on the card at Oaklawn. Secret Oath went off at 1-2 in a field of 6. I had her on top, had fired a 46 and change bullet work just about 2 weeks ago, and then comes back yesterday in the Martha Washington at 1 1/16. And looks pretty good doing it. Secret Oath, the number 6 horse here. Chart margin 7.25. I mean, top of the stretch just kind of set levels off and opens up here. Again, as the 1-2 favorite. Luis Contreras on board. And again, Dwayne Lucas trains. Lucas, I was watching the winner's circle to see if Lucas was there. Lucas was not there yesterday. But his horse gets it done. Be interesting to see, you know, if the coach, as I say, the veteran trainer, can keep this one going along the Oaks Trail, as it were. She certainly looked good yesterday down at Oaklawn in, you know, 1 1/16, 2-turn event, ran away and hit from the field. And it was a short field of 6, but there were some horses in there that had some ability. We'll see as the year progresses how the field turns out. There's enough of a resume here, though. Optionality, who ran second, was coming in off a 3-race win streak, including a couple of stakes races for Steve Asmussen. And so I think that one was legit. So it was a nice win yesterday for Secret Oath. And before we go to our break, let's look at one more race from across the country. And again, it is 3-year-old season, so we do like to concentrate on some of those horses that may move on to the Derby trail. We will see. Out of the races like this, it's hard to know. Again, we looked at the 2 3-year-old races at Laurel. They were both 7-furlong races, and you never know. Will these horses stretch out? What's going to be their game plan going forward? And yesterday out at Santa Anita, there was a 7-furlong race, the San Vicente grade two event, $200,000 up for grabs. And it was a small field of 5. Bob Baffert had 3 runners in here, but one winds up 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. Forbidden Kingdom will be the winner for Dick Mandela. Forbidden Kingdom, the number 1 horse, went off at 7-2. Baffert's Doppelganger was 4-5 as the favorite, and Doppelganger was the number 4 horse, winding up 4th in the field of 5. So a little bit of a disappointing effort for the favorite. Doppelganger was coming out of a maiden debut effort win at Los Al in the middle of December, and it was a good enough win to make Doppelganger the favorite yesterday, but could not get it done in career start number 2, as again, Forbidden Kingdom, the number 1 horse, wins. Forbidden Kingdom came in a win, a 2nd, and a 3rd in the first 3 starts, so had some experience and had stakes experience with the last two starts, the third and the second being in stakes. Gets it done yesterday. And again, chart margin 2.25 length. So it was a nice performance for Forbidden Kingdom for, again, Dick Mandela out there in Southern California. And again, hard to know at this point whether these horses will stretch out or whether they, well, I was going to say whether the connections will try to stretch out. Pretty much unless there's some indication not to, some strong indication not to. If you have a good three-year-old, you at some point you try this, you know, in this first three-month portion of the year, you try to get the two turns in just to see, do we continue to the Derby or not? So you would think that one will give it a shot, but it's always a question mark, certainly. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, as promised earlier, Mike Welch from the Daily Racing Forum, the Florida correspondent for the Daily Racing Forum. Although that said, Mike is based up here in the summertime at Saratoga, and he bounces around to a lot of the big events as well. But home base, I think, most of the year down in Florida. And certainly, he was at Gulfstream yesterday for the big day. So we'll talk about Pegasus World Cup Day, some of the stakes action right after this. Stay tuned. Having trouble finding us? It's actually quite simple. Whether online or on your TV, it's never been easier to watch and wager on championship horse racing with Capital OTB. Simply log on to CapitalOTBBet.com. There you can watch our morning shows, live stream races, and wager on our state-of-the-art wagering platform. You can also watch from the comfort of your home on Spectrum Cable Channel 1250 or Fios Channel 467. And win more with Capital OTB.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Bridgestone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Bridgestone surges past. Bridgestone wins the Belmont Stakes.
But here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Barbara. These two are travels head-to-head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. We just contacted Mike Welch. He just needed a couple minutes. In the morning, he's clocking horses, so he had a couple more things to do, but we'll get him in a couple of minutes. In the meantime, the Graded Stakes Committee sent out this year's update on graded stakes, and there were a couple of changes. Races upgraded, Saratoga, the Galway upgraded from non-listed black type to listed. The Shuvie goes from a grade 3 to a grade 2. And I'm just going down the list here looking at Sarah. The Mahoney goes from non-listed black type to listed. And again, I'm just reading off the Saratoga changes here. On the downgrade side of thing, the Adirondack went from a grade 2 to a grade 3. The Flower Ball, this little concerning, went from a grade 1 to a grade 2. I'm going to have to go back and look at the charts to see what the fields were like for the Flower Ball. But that one gets downgraded. The Bernard Baruch goes from a grade 2 to a grade 3. So that one gets downgraded. Both of those, I'm going to have to go back and look at the charts. The notable to me in here, the Bluegrass. And this was a good move. The Bluegrass went from a grade 2 to a grade 1. And that one I definitely think is worthwhile. At Belmont, the Jockey Club Derby Invitational, part of that new series, moves to a grade 3. certainly that deserved a grading off of what we've seen recently. I'm just looking, and that these are among the three-year-old races that have been changed a little bit. Again, the most notable one to me on the whole list was the Bluegrass getting the upgrade, deservedly, to the grade one, because it is one of the top races in the springtime, certainly in their spring season, one of the top races at Keeneland, and typically attracts a top field of Derby contenders. So that was, to me, the most notable on there. If you didn't check out this week, the articles, Matt Haggerty did a great recap every day of the Bob Baffert hearing in New York, as NYRA has banned or attempting to ban Bob Baffert. He has appealed that. There was a hearing this week, and again, Matt Haggerty had a great recap every day. So if you haven't read that, go to the Daily Racing Forum, and you can pick up those articles from this week to read about the hearing as it progressed through the last few days of the week. So we'll see how that plays out. Again, to me, the whole thing revolves around how slowly the Kentucky Derby situation is playing out. And I thought at one point, a month and a half ago or so, it seemed like they had done the last of the testing that was necessary to satisfy the officials and satisfy the Baffert team. And I thought once the testing was all done, this thing would move faster than sooner rather than later, as it were, but still up in the air. But again, that, as we talked about earlier with the point situation with Baffert horses and whatnot, it's just going to put a fly in the ointment for the Derby this year, you would have to think. But we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. All right. Mike said he just needed a few minutes, so we'll take another break. We'll give Mike another try when we come back. Again, look at some of the Pegasus action. Stay tuned.
Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTV.com.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As discussed before the break, we are joined now by our friend Mike Welch, Florida correspondent for the Daily Racing Forum. Although Mike, as I said in the previous segment, Saratoga in the summer, you're up here, and then big events all throughout the year. But home base is Florida, right?
Say that again? Yeah, home base is Florida.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So we'll talk a little Gulfstream Park and the action yesterday, the Pegasus World Cup. And whatnot. Oh, and I also wanted to mention mandatory pay in the rainbow today, right?
Yes, there is.
Yeah.
Yep.
So people should keep that in mind if they take a look at the rainbow. But let's jump right into it. I would love your reaction. You know, there was a reaction on Twitter, obviously, as there always is. And I talked about it last week, and we had yesterday on the show, we had Todd Pletcher and Brad Cox and Clash of the Titans, and since the Breeders' Cup, we've been looking forward to this. Two superstars that both had the need for the lead style, and we were looking for a real battle out of the gate all the way around the track, and then just keeping our fingers crossed that they would keep going down the stretch. And then as they hit the first turn, the air came out of the balloon a little bit. We saw a fabulous performance yesterday by Life is Good, and we're picking up here as they come out of the gate. Life is Good goes right to the front on the rail. Nick's Go cannot get up and get stymied a little bit here behind Stiletto Boy. And Life is Good out to a fairly easy early lead, took them all the way around. Again, it was a big performance. Wasn't quite what we were hoping for, but what were your impressions from the Pegasus?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It wasn't what we were hoping for. It wasn't what we were expecting. And, you know, that's what happens in horse racing sometimes. You sit for 3 or 4 days and try to analyze the speed figures and the pace figures and who's going to do what strategy, and then the gates open and, you know, things develop totally different than what you expect, and that's what happened here. Nick's Go just really kind of, I thought, maybe didn't grab the track real well coming out of the gate in that first 16th of a mile, and it gave Life is Good the edge going into the first turn, and Irad jumped on that edge, and even he admitted he was totally surprised when he looked over to his left there going into the first turn and there was nobody there. He expected to be either stalking or going head to head perhaps with Nick's Go. He never expected to be 5 in front like that, and at that point essentially the race was over. Life is Good just kept going. He was a little erratic running. He was out in the middle of the racetrack down the backstretch. He was back on the rail on the turn. He drifted out, finished out near the middle of the racetrack at the end, but it didn't matter. He was just dominant. And the Nick's Go probably, you could say, obviously didn't run his best race. And then I thought, considering everything, he did well to, you know, still hold on to second money. He's not accustomed to be chasing anybody, so for him to dig in and hold off Stiletto Boy to be second was probably attributed to his class and the ability he has. And I know they wanted to go out a winner. They didn't, but they did go out with a horse that seems to come out of the race good. And that was the other thing Brad Cox had said earlier in the week. As long as he came out healthy and to go to stud, retire to stud, a healthy horse with no issues, that's a big plus for him as well.
Yeah, and I think it was your follow-up article in the DRF online where Brad said something to the effect of, well, we had to go to plan B, but we were kind of hoping for plan A, and that is certainly what it looked like going into that first turn.
Yeah, no, he really wanted to go to the lead and make Life as Good come after him, and it just didn't develop that way. And, you know, he told me, that was the first question I asked him. I said, were you surprised to see, you know, the race developed the way it did and that horse 5 in front of you that so quickly? He said he was shocked, just totally shocked. Never, ever expected to see that.
And you and I were talking before we went on the air. The number has come out for that one, the buyer figure, and it is an eye-popping. As I say, we didn't get what we wanted as far as the battle, but we certainly witnessed a very good performance. And obviously, the check mark now goes next to Life is Good, 2 turns, and a real player in the handicap division coming up this year. It's going to be fun to see how they play it out. But the buyer figure was, again, kind of eye-popping.
Yeah, he got a 110. Actually, I discussing it with one of the buyer people last night, I thought it might be a little higher, maybe around 113 or 114. Now, there is a discrepancy in the final time of the Hooper, and I have to check and see if that buyer number was assigned the 110 before they retimed the Hooper, because the final time of the Hooper was about a second and a fifth slower than originally reported, and that would skew the buyer figures a little bit. So I'm guessing they have caught up with that and made the buyer figure accordingly with the new revised Hooper time, but I will double check. I mean, if you do see a revised buyer later today, that would be the reason for it, but I'm guessing that it was a long time before that number came out. Usually we'd have that number an hour or two after the race was over. We didn't get it until this morning, so that probably takes into consideration the adjusted time for the Hooper, but we'll see. If there's a change, we'll we'll have it out there on Twitter for everybody later today.
All right, we'll keep our eyes open for that. But again, that 110 is absolutely solid. It's going to be fun to see what the game plan is going forward for Life is Good, certainly, but kick the year off in fine fashion. Todd Pletcher having a great day, and I'm just curious your thoughts on the Pegasus turf. I could not pull the trigger on Never Surprised. I like Never Surprised. I thought, boy, from that outside post position, I just can't use him. And then Luis Saez says, yeah, outside post position, you know, who cares? I'm going to the lead. And given that start, I thought, oh, Never Surprised may take him all the way around. Just could not hold up the more veteran Colonel Liam, even off the layoff. Colonel Liam, and I'm looking at the buyers, he got a 102 with a nice performance. And after the race, I was out in the front half of our facility here, and I didn't hear the comments, but it seemed like Irad Ortiz was really emotional after the victory.
Yeah, I didn't notice it either. That's what somebody told me. I was just too busy. I was still writing some earlier stories and, you know, getting ready for the big race. So that's what they told me on the interviews after the race. He was, and I'm guessing partly it was just because, you know, a week ago or 10 days ago it looked like he wasn't even going to be around to ride, you know, either of those horses yesterday. So for him to come back from that injury and be there and then win the two big races on the card, I'd be a little emotional too. So. I can understand that. I'm assuming that's the reason for it, but I didn't see it, so I can't testify to that. But hats off to Todd to have this horse ready off a 7-8 month layoff like that and to beat a Stella Field like he did, and for a stablemate to hold on to be second. I mean, it's 2 years in a row now that's Todd's run 1-1-2 in the Pegasus Turf.
Yeah, impressive. And Todd had another nice runner in the Fred Hooper that you mentioned earlier, Fearless. I liked Fearless over Speaker's Corner, but the Bill Mott trainee, who had shown real flashes of brilliance, obviously, Speaker's Corner got it done yesterday in the Hooper, and I'm just looking, Speaker's Corner with a 102 buyer. The chart margin winds up to be a length and a quarter over Fearless, who was about 10 lengths clear of the third-place finisher. So it was the two logical horses, but it was nice to see. I mean, this is a four-year-old, still fairly lightly raced, who probably also stamped himself as a contender in the handicap division this year, kind of validating some of those triple-digit buyers he's thrown earlier. What were your thoughts in the Hooper?
Well, I thought Fearless ran every bit as good as Speaker's Corner, considering the trip. He did not break real sharply from the rail. He had to kind of rush up coming out of the chute just to get in some sort of position down the backstretch. He had to run wide and make a steady run. He was 5-6 lengths behind Speaker's Corner, leaving the backstretch. For him to get within a length of him with a wide trip like that, I thought was a huge effort on Fearless's part. I think you switch the post positions and the way the two came out of the gate, and you probably would have had a different result at the end. But the fact that they were 9-10 lengths ahead of the others shows you how powerful a performance that it was for both horses. And we're going to hear a lot about them down the road. Speaker's Corner, Bill Ma told me after the race, they're still trying to decide if he's a mile and an eighth horse or a miler, but it sounds like after yesterday's race, they might keep him at a mile with the Met Mile, perhaps the long-term goal for now. Fearless, I did not talk to Todd yet to see what they're going to do with him. I'm sure disappointed that he didn't get the job done when maybe if the trips had been different, he would have been the best horse, but take nothing away from him. That was a super effort on his part considering the trip.
And like to get an opinion on the new addition to the Pegasus World Cup Day card, Pegasus Filly and Mare Turf, and get some impressions on what I thought was this was kind of an eye-popping performance from Regal Glory, who goes to the back of the pack and then just a sustained run. I don't know if it reflected on the field or her talent, but we're watching the stretch run here. Regal Glory's the number four horse. Jose Ortiz on board and just grinds him down late and winds up opening up by 2.5. Again, visually, this was just a really impressive performance. A 100 even buyer, so gets a triple-digit buyer here with, as I say, what was a visually impressive performance from Regal Glory.
Well, on paper, she stood out in there. She's coming off a grade one win into a grade three race. Numbers-wise, she was faster than the field, and you know, if she had gotten a little cleaner beginning and better early position, she probably would have won by 5 or 6. So it wasn't a surprise to me she won the race, but it was visually impressive considering, you know, the early run for her wasn't ideal. So she didn't have much of a trip, and she still prevailed. And I thought it was a great effort on the runner-up's part. Alms, if you were a Clocker Report follower from us yesterday, you probably had a pretty good day, but Alms working lights out here on the Tapita, and it really validated those works, running a super effort to come back. Actually got passed by Shifty Shee at the top of the stretch and fought back along the rail to be second best at 19-1. So filled out the exacta there behind the logical winner. But, it was girls against men against boys or whatever in the girls' race, whatever you want to call it. Regal Glory was just too much for the rest of them, and did what we expected her to do.
Yeah, it was very, very impressive, certainly. Give us a little feel for what it was like down there, crowd-wise and whatnot. I know it's been chilly temperatures, but now, given the situation over the past couple of years, how was Pegasus Day overall down at golf? Oh, and have you walked through the new facility yet? Where the Tiki Bar used to be.
They put in the Carousel Club there now. It's going to be it's going to be here permanently. I think they're going to use it as a place for trying to lure young fans to come and watch the races from during the day, and then it'll be kind of a nightclub situation during the evening. It was a big crowd, a very enthusiastic crowd. They came to see, like you said, they came to see the match of two titans, and it didn't turn out to be what we thought, but still, it was a great day. It was chilly out here, relatively speaking. But the crowd didn't seem to mind. I mean, people were sitting outside eating and at tables and enjoying the day. We have the big new Jumbotron up finally a few days ago. We got that back, and that was a big plus. People could watch the race from the apron if they needed to or wanted to. So it was fun. I mean, Pegasus is always a big event here, and they do it upright. And now we just fall back into our regular schedule and then await the next big one here, which will be Florida Derby Day in a couple of months.
Yeah, and our game plan is to be down there again after a couple of years where we couldn't make it down again given the situation. So we're looking forward to returning down there ourselves and getting it. Make sure things warm up. I'm sure by the time we get wind there, we'll have it warmed up. But I need some Florida weather at this point. As I said, when I drove in this morning, single digits up here. So even what you had yesterday looked good to me. Mike, before I let you go, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but tout again the workout reports and how people can find those and use those. And I will mention, as I went through Twitter yesterday and I just pulled it up again, Marty McGee had tweeted out that if folks were following you early, you had the cold on top pick 3. For $111 yesterday on Pegasus World Cup Day. So I'm sure some of that played out from the workout report. Again, talk a little bit about the report.
Yeah, we've got guys covering I'm here. We've got Mike Vesey at Palmetto's and David Norton, who gave Life is Good 4 consecutive A grades for his last 4 works. So tip of the hat for Dave for, touting everybody that this horse is a superstar, and he sure proved it yesterday. You can get the works at drf.com. Just go into the handicapping section or drf.com/clocker. We'll get you there, and we're going to be here the rest of the meet. I think it's a terrific product, and we have a lot of fans, and so far, if you've been following the report this meet, you should be in the black, I would think.
Yeah, and certainly we touted plenty up at Saratoga. Great work up there, down there with the different training venues and whatnot is always very useful. Mike, as always, appreciate the conversation. Continued good work down there at Gulfstream. We'll talk to you again before the meet ends. And, of course, we'll see you Florida Derby weekend.
Okay, looking forward to it. I guarantee you the weather will be warmer on there. April 1st, and it is here right now today.
Yeah, very good. That's what we're looking forward to. Mike Welch from the Daily Racing Form. You can find him in the hard copy or at drf.com. All right, we'll wrap things up for this Sunday morning. Seth Merrow in the studio with Racing Across America. We will be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTV Live for a Sunday afternoon. Do want to thank our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship of this program, some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB, Gulfstream Park, during their championship meet. We appreciate their support. And again, we'll be down towards the end of the meet for Florida Derby weekend. Really looking forward to that. Big day at Gulfstream yesterday. Boy, that was a lot of fun with some big performances. And again, some solid buyer numbers as I went through. Life is Good with the 110. Colonel Liam with the 102. Regal Glory, a flat 100. Speaker's Corner with a 102. So there was some nice performances yesterday, certainly on that stakes-laden card. All right, I'm going to wrap it up. There is a note. Once again, mandatory pay in the rainbow today at Gulfstream Park, so keep that in mind. Maybe worth taking a little pop. Put a, you know, the 20-cent increment, you can put together an interesting ticket for a reasonable amount of money, so maybe take a look at that. The mandatory pay, they're expecting, I think I read, let me just see if I can quickly pull that up, because sometimes they will say what they are anticipating in the pool, and I thought I read that they were looking at about $3 million at least. And I think, yeah, that if I just read that quickly correctly, yeah, they're looking for about $3 million in the pool today. So keep that in mind. Mandatory pay, Gulfstream Park in the Rainbow Six. All right. Excuse me. Seth Merrill, Racing Across America on a Sunday morning. Thanks for tuning in. We'll wrap up Racing Across America. But again, we'll be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. We'll see you then.